they're always watching. The thing that you carry in your pocket, your handbag, that thing that you're spending a bit more time on at the moment, it gets you from A to B. It's got your favorite videos on it. It's got your contacts in there. And that thing is your phone. And today you've been hearing across the morning about a couple of applications that have been created to track what you do in a hope of just seeing where the spread of COVID-19 is occurring in your community. The first one is about your symptoms. You put in there when you have a cough, a runny nose, a sore throat. The hope is that shows where we need to focus testing on. And the other, well, it tracks everywhere you go to try to see your spread if you test positive to COVID-19. So how do you feel about this idea of being tracked in this way? It could be rolled out in a voluntary capacity in a fortnight and will send your data straight back to the government. So tracking people, is it good? Is it evil? Is it somewhere in between? Let's talk through that idea with your resident futurist, Steve Sammartino. Good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
Good, thank you. Are you surprised to see apps are used in this way right now in a global pandemic?
No, I'm not surprised at all. And in fact, the big tech companies have already been doing this for the longest time. What's interesting and curious is that usually tracking and information was the province of government. Government always had the most developed technology and did it first. But now we're seeing this great reversal where the big tech companies are already doing it. Mm. And now they're going to hand that data on to governments. And so this information, weirdly, it's already out there. It's already happening. But just for private companies, for private profit, and now it's going to be put into the hands of government, and they're building, well, Apple and Google announced an app that they're building that will track us just via the Bluetooth to see who we've been in contact with and create like a little chain of connection and send that to the government. I'm not surprised.
Yeah.
And the sad thing is it's really, really useful. It really, really will work and it will help a lot. But I just worry about after the pandemic.
Let's talk about its positives for right now. What could work? Why is this? What are the positives around it for right now, for this world we're living in at the moment?
So at the moment, the way that we can use this technology is every single person and every single phone that is connected, and most of us carry our phone with us everywhere we go. I mean, you know, it's the first and last thing we touch when we go to bed these days instead of our partner. So it's, you know, it's something that goes everywhere with us. It can track who we've been in contact with. And what it will enable us to do is follow a chain of infection, even backwards. And so let's say one person gets infected. Through this technology, we will be able to see who that person has been in contact with over the last 2 weeks, and then advise those people that it's best practice that they get tested. So it actually enables us to go backwards in time and find out who we've been in contact with to stop the chain of infection so that those people know to get tested and then isolate themselves. So it's incredibly beneficial. Mm. Taiwan have used it, and they've got the lowest death rate in the world per population by an absolute long shot. Of course, they did other things like testing and temperature checks, but they used the phones as a way to work out who's been in contact with who. And so it really does work. The technology will be incredibly useful for something like this, like a pandemic. So it's going to have incredible functionality. And the truth of it is that it's probably going to be the most effective tool we've got to stopping this in amongst testing.
I'm interested that Apple and Google are involved as big players, that the government hasn't looked at getting someone else to create this, someone who's a little less commercial. Is it just because they can do it and they can do it quickly?
Yeah, I think the thing is that Google and Apple have the two operating systems. So there are two operating systems, and that is basically the word that I'm using for mobile phones. So you either have an Android mobile phone, which is Samsung and all of the others, or an Apple phone. And that's, you know, 95% of the telephone market of operating systems. So in order to have a system that can get into everyone's pockets with their smartphones, these are the two companies that have the controlling interest. So if we went with a smaller company, we'd still have to use the hardware that is controlled by those two companies. So that's the reason why they've been chosen. But it really does point out the power of big tech. It's almost like the government is going capping hand to big tech. Oh, please help me, big tech. I need your beautiful technology that you've developed. And so it really shows the power shift in society and who are the most powerful institutions are. And it's not government. It's not government. It's big tech.
We are hearing that magic word voluntary at the moment as well, that you won't have to sign up for it. What are we hearing around that at the moment, Steve?
So the proposal, both from the government and from Apple and Google, is that this will be opt-in, which means that people have to opt in. Now, I'm wondering, Kaya, if this means that it's going to be hidden among those 30,000 words, terms and conditions that we all just say.
I read every single word
reading.
Of that, yeah. I don't.
Do you?
No.
I am sending
I
you a medal right
yeah.
now.
I don't have time for that.
You're the only person in the world, and they know it. They know that no one reads it, which is why they sneak stuff in there. Look, my understanding is it'll be in your settings where you have to opt in. But often opting in is usually like, oh, we put it as a default and you can opt out. That's really the tricky one. But the truth of it is, unless everyone opts in, the virus doesn't care. Like if you have, it's like having a small leak in a bucket. With a virus, if you have a small leak and then it gets out there, it becomes really hard to stop. So, you know what, I think it'd be better if it was an opt-in, but the government promised to turn it off in 3 months when we don't need it anymore. For me, that's a better option, to have everyone opt-in while we go through it, but have a promised end date on the surveillance and the technology.
Aren't there things that you can do on your smartphone now that stop sending a lot of that data? Like, because it's Bluetooth, is there a way for, if your Bluetooth just isn't engaged, that'll stop it even if you're not on the app, or you do have the app and you want it to stop one day? Like, is it easy to turn that sort of part of your phone off, or not without then losing what you actually need it for?
Yeah, so you raised the two really great points there. The first one is, if it is a singular form of communication that is used in the app, like Bluetooth, and you turn it off, then it won't work. So that's true. It won't be able to connect with the other phones. But if it is that it tracks you via things like Wi-Fi, 5G or 3G towers and how they're connected, then it becomes really hard to turn off, because there's a number of ways the phone can connect with other phones. You know, Bluetooth and Wi-Fi are two of them. Yeah, if you turn it off, then theoretically it won't work.
It is 15 minutes away from 10 o'clock this morning. You're hearing from Steve Sammartino. He's your regular futurist here on ABC Newcastle Mornings. You can join the conversation as well. All you have to do is send me a text, 0487 99 1233. A couple of thoughts coming through. Neil in Wallsend says, you always should have some sort of record, whether it be Google Timeline or this app. He says, yes, I'm aware of people's reluctance, but for those that are worried, then you should be carrying a paper diary of your movements. So if you get the virus, you could provide it to the appropriate people to track and alert people of where you've been, who you've had contact with, where you've shopped, etc. That's from Neil in Wallsend. Someone else says, no. Once you have handed the right for the government to track you, they'll not want to relinquish that right when this is over. I do not believe in conspiracy theories, says this text, but this is the slippery slope to one step closer to martial law. Where do you sit on this? You can join the conversation. Text me 0487 99 1233. Steve, what are some of the concerns around this? Privacy is a big one, right?
Yeah, privacy is the huge one. And what it does is it normalizes surveillance. So if we think back to 9/11, we had in America the Patriot Act, which we started to track, and surveillance became a normal thing to the threat of violence or the threat of terror. But usually what happens is once the government is given a certain power to track things after the event, it very rarely gets turned off. And once that information is in the government databases, it can be married up with other things. So that's the thing that we don't understand, is that while it might only be one thin layer of data, or who you're connected with is one of them, the government could then use that to do a database to work out who's connected with who. And all of a sudden, this might be used in other areas like fighting crime. They might say, well, okay, Steve is connected with Kaya, and Kaya is a bit of a bad person. She's out there committing some crime up there.
What do you know, Steve?
Yeah, that's right. And next thing you know, I'm associated, you know, guilt by association. The question is, once the information gets inside a database, what other information does it get married with, and how does that get used? So the slippery slope that people are concerned with is a real concern. And if history is anything to learn by, we have to be careful what we hand over to a government. Because if the government changes with different objectives, the information is still in there and they get access to it.
I think that's a really interesting. Like, we all sign up to these plans. We sign up to have these phones. We know that we love them in our life and we can't live without them for a lot of us. But as soon as that word government gets thrown in there, it gets a little murkier than handing it to big corporations. Why is that, Steve?
Yeah, well, I think it's interesting is I actually think we should be worried the other way. People tend to have a distrust of government and our trust in institutions has declined over the last couple of decades. Personally, I trust government more than I trust private corporations who have a profit incentive. And I think that we've got that back to front. The real question we should be asking is, wow, why is it that Apple and Google can do all of these things unchecked without any regulation and track our data and trick us into the way that they make us hand over the data with our phones and not really tell us? That's the real question. The real question is, how did we get here? How did we get here that some private corporations have more power than governments and governments are going to them to ask for help? That's actually the reversal. And if there was anything we should be thinking about with this, it isn't that governments will have access to this information. The question should be, why does the government have to go to private corporations to get it?
Do we need to consider the word hacker in this mix as well?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, certainly once information sits in the database, it can always be hacked. The danger with hacking is 99% of hacks we never ever find out about. And so we can be pretty certain that once the information is out there, then it'll be available on the dark web to hackers. So, you know, my net assumption is everything that is digital and has ever been taken from my data points is available on the dark market. And that's one thing that we need to remember is that everything digital is traceable forever.
Mm. Can they really gain much, though, of seeing that I go to the shops once a week, that I come to work Monday to Friday for 2 hours of a day? You know, in this social distancing climate where we're not doing a lot of what we usually do, is there much that a hacker can actually gain from having our Bluetooth data showing those small places that we go?
Yeah, there's not a huge amount that they can do with that. The way hacking works is it's like a set of layers that need to be layered upon each other. The best way that they hack, and the danger is you get one database with a certain set of information and then marry it up with another database. And when you put them together, you can paint a full picture of someone by getting a number of databases hacked and put together. That's how we end up with things like identity theft. We end up with financial fraud online. Like a simple example might be, imagine Uber gets hacked and it knows where you go and it has your name on there and that's hacked. But then they might realize that you went to a medical clinic and that medical clinic gets hacked. And then they can marry up who was the person that went to that medical clinic at the same time and then had that medical concern, which would have been private, and those two things could be married together. And you can work out that Steve's got a terrible infectious disease. You know, it's the way things are put together with separate databases is where the danger comes from, not the single database.
I'm interested in that idea of a surveillance state. We hear about it a bit. I know there was talk of CCTV in Darwin, in the Northern Territory, that would track faces and be able to do that. There's a new cameras or face searching recognition software that I know is being used by some police forces in the States, where if I've posted a picture of you and me at the gym, it will recognise that. It'll search everything. Have you seen the TV show Hunted, Steve?
I haven't seen Hunters, no.
Filmed in the UK, it's like a mock-up of chasing criminals, basically, where you're trying to outrun this incredible unit of police for however many days and win lots of money. But they use all the surveillance in England and the UK to track people, everything from being able to access phone calls to phone taps to CCTV to all of that sort of stuff. Are there areas of the world that are already much more ahead of Australia when it comes to surveillance and this type of issue?
Yeah, so China is leading the world in this way, and given that they've got an autocratic government, it's you can imagine that's the way it is. But everything is tracked in China. All of the big technology firms that they have there, they have their versions of Google Search and YouTube and so on, are all tracked and going to a government database. And you may have heard, I mean, they have a social scoring system, which they're bringing in, which is based on your behaviours and what you do.
Mm.
So it'll include things like jaywalking. You lose points for that. If you eat fruit and vegetables and healthy foods, you gain points for that. If you visit your grandma, you gain points for that. And if you do things that are dangerous or socially unacceptable, you lose points. So they've got to the point now where social tracking is kind of like a Hunger Games for your human behavior socially. So that's where we're at. This surveillance state is real. And I just can't help but think that a surveilled economy and a free economy just can't live together. It just seems, it's very hard to say why it's bad, but it's almost like there's something deep inside our chest that tells us this isn't right and this isn't going to end well.
An interesting point from this texter who says, now more than ever, as we're not using cash, we're giving info, more info to private companies. They know where and when we shop, what we're buying and where we're going. It you know, our economic habits have changed a lot in just a month.
Yeah, they have. And in fact, you know, even the stores that remain open, it's like we don't accept cash at the moment. So the government is going to get their wish on outlawing cash. Already in Australia, you can't spend more than $10,000. In actual cash. That's against the law right now as we speak, and many countries are moving away from that. So look, with the surveillance state that we live in, it's happening really quick. And I think we need to have a political and social discussion about the downsides and the upsides. And I think we need to set some boundaries on acceptability, what happens to the data, who has access to the data. You know, one of the great ways to solve the problems with data is that if the government are tracking the data and they have it, give all of us access to what you have. And then that becomes a safe check, a reversal safe check, so that we can say, hey, wait a minute, oh, that's okay, you've got that. It's got to be like a phone book that we can all open and see what's listed. And then that way it becomes an even playing field and it becomes a good safe check.
Steve, interesting to start this discussion with you this morning. Thank you so much for your time.
Absolute pleasure.
Futurist and your regular guest here on ABC Newcastle Morning, Steve Sammartino.